G'day, Cobbers. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson coming at you from the Northern Territory of Australia. This is On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 332. This is Saturday, the 15th of August, 2020. This late recording in the week may be too late to get it to Jewel Stanley at UCY-TV for this week's show, but I'm recording it nonetheless. I've just traveled over 4,500 kilometers from north central Tasmania to Darwin. On Monday, in the early afternoon, I flew from Hobart to Adelaide. And then a few hours later, I got on a Greyhound bus and rode that for almost 48 hours that put me here to Darwin on Wednesday afternoon. So I actually made it. I actually made it all the way from Tasmania to Darwin in only 48 hours. Oh my God. My ass was sore from sitting on the bus, and it still is, but oh my God, so much to say. I'd really like to thank the Spirit of Tasmania and all my friends and family of all the kingdoms of life there and all the ancestors in Tasmania as being the crown chakra of the rainbow serpent and my favorite part of Australia. And it's been such an honor and a blessing for me to be there for the past 5 months to ride out the whole coronavirus epidemic, the first wave. And it seems like now I'm launching into my second wave on this visit to Australia. Really, really ultra amazing. But this visit to Tasmania, I mean, I could talk for hours about that. Just the most powerful. This was the longest I've ever spent there. The longest before had been about 4.5 months when my partner Lisbon and I were living on Flinders Island. But I just got an incredible amount of work done in every different possible way. Was just blessed with beautiful abundance of everything. Got to do just about everything that I had hoped. I didn't get to visit Three Hummock Island or Flinders Island. Flinders, I don't think, even opened up to non-residents coming there. And Three Hummock was the logistics of getting there. I know I'll make it there one of these days. And I know I'll probably be back to Tasmania probably fairly soon. It just depends on how everything's going with the border regulations and stuff like that. It's constantly fluctuating. I was hoping to go back to New Zealand in November. Surely, I mean, that's like what? September, October. That's like 3 months from now. Surely it'll have opened up by then. But there's plenty of traveling and visiting and work to be done here in the Northern Territory. By the way, that funny sound you hear in the background, it's not just the humming of ceiling fans, which is like a novel thing for me to be around here in the top end. It's not something I heard much of in Tasmania. But also the sound of the Yidaki, commonly known as the Didge or the Didgeridoo. This is the area where it is originally from, up here in the top end. Hope to be encountering some really cool Didge players and people that make it. And one of my goals up here in the Darwin area is to try to catch up with my favorite Aboriginal actor named David Gopala. And he's from Menangrita in Arnhem Land, and apparently he's around. Apparently he's not in that great of a health, but also does a lot of partying and stuff from what I heard. So anyway, I've made a really nice painted rock for him that I'm going to try to give to him while I'm up here. But oh my God, I miss Tasmania already. I miss Mr. Platypus, who I would go and play my flute with every evening. And just about on the very last evening I was there, I was standing by the river playing my flute, and he popped up only a couple of meters from me. And he was kind of looking around, and then he looked up and saw me, and it was like his little arms went up in the air, and he goes, "Oh my God!" And he was startled, and so he instantly just dove. And so that was, he wasn't expecting me to be so close there. But such a very fantastic, magic place. Really like to thank everybody and my new medicine wheel that sort of anchored a vortex there, metaphorically speaking, of course. And oh my God, I have to tell you about the flight from Hobart to Adelaide. It was on an airline called Jetstar, which is a subsidiary of Qantas, but they're renowned for being, well, they call themselves budget, but by the time you pay for all the stuff, you've paid just as much as you would for anybody else. You have to pay their what seems like a low fare, but that doesn't include any bags. And also, it doesn't even include a seat. You've got to pay an additional fee of like at least, I think it was at least $8 just to have a seat. I don't know what happens if you don't pay that. You have to stand. But and so I paid the maximum amount that you can pay to get the maximum amount of weight, which allowed me 14 kilograms of carry-on and 40 kilograms of check. So that's 54 kilograms. And you're talking to the guy that normally, that probably just arrived from New Zealand with about probably 90-something kilos of gear, including all my cameras and computers and stuff like that. Jetstar does not allow you to carry your laptop on the plane as something that's not weighed. But I erred on the side of caution and spent a shitload of money to post boxes of stuff to myself, including a last-minute box on a few hours before my flight that took me from being 10 kilograms over to 9 kilograms under. So if I'd had more accurate weighing abilities, I could have equalized that all out. But anyway, everything is either with me or on its way, and I'm in a really fantastic situation here. The climate, I got used to being cold in Tasmania. I got used to the ice and the chilliness and being able to stay nice and warm in my room and get in bed and be really nice and warm. And it was fairly cold the last month here in Tasmania. About just a few nights before I left, there was a low of minus 14 up on the plateau, and I saw ice most mornings for the past month. And so, but it just, I got used to it. But now I'm sitting here naked at my friend's house. He's actually coming back from Brisbane tomorrow, so I've got a whole house to myself. I'm looking out the door to the swimming pool. And I'm sitting here, I'm having a 100 Foster moment. This is the second broadcast of On the Brink Radio that I've recorded naked. Once was on Great Barrier Island last year when my friends John and Peggy Ann were gone for a few days, and I was able to sit on my painting deck in the nice warm sun, and it's obscured by, from neighbors, by bushes and stuff like that, as I am right now. So it's very interesting, and there's, it's probably about, well, I'd say it's getting probably close to between 28 and 30 out in the sun, but in the shade it's quite nice, and it's really, really, really nice. And yesterday, my friend brought me a really nice bicycle, and I bicycled down to the Casuarina Coastal Reserve, which is about 6 kilometers from here, and we got down there and was able to go swimming in the ocean exactly as the sun was going down. I sat and watched the sun go into the ocean over the horizon while I was in the water, and it was so nice and lovely. I mean, I like the chilly water there in Tasmania. That's probably, I'm guessing, probably about 11 degrees, but this water is probably about 22, 23, something like that, and so I could stay in it for a lot longer and not have to worry about getting too cold from staying in. But so lovely and beautiful. It's so nice to be here. I love the top end. In Darwin, I've lived here. I've spent several months here in 2004 and several months in 2007 and several months in 2010. And I'll probably be here at least quite a few weeks this time. And so it's just some really magic, powerful things have happened to me up here. And I'd really like to honor the bicycle. I think it's like the coolest invention that humans ever came up with. You know, of course, the wheel had to come first. But I've been really blessed to have nice bicycles to ride in New Zealand and in Tasmania and now here. And my friend Stephen, who I'm staying with, we'll get to meet it for the first time in person tomorrow when he comes back from Brisbane. He got kind of stuck there because of some of the border restrictions and stuff. But he is a bicycle racer who did the Tour de France. And I think he was racing either in that or another race just last year. And he came off and broke his leg. And so he's still recovering from that. But he's got, haven't even seen his bikes yet because they're locked up in a room. But super, super ones that are like $10,000 a piece. If I'm really, really nice and lucky, he might let me take one of those on a ride sometime. But I really like to honor the bicycle. And also, I'd like to honor my beautiful little plant, the Go-To Cola, the Centella Asiatica, who I successfully brought with me from New Zealand back into its home country of Australia, because it's indigenous here. It grows on the dunes in New South Wales and Queensland. And I got it going for about five different people in Tasmania. And I brought one with me here. And now it has an extensive little root system. So I've got it now in four different pots here. And it really loves the warmth. I can see it just taking off already, because it kind of, even though I took really good care of it in Tasmania, I brought it into my room every night so it didn't get too cold. And I put it out in the morning. And it was going, it was all putting out new little leaves, but now it's just pricking up and standing up and sending out even, going even a lot faster because it really likes the heat. But yes, and I'd like to honor the spirit of Uncle Bob Randall, the indigenous elder from the Central Desert. He was one of the custodians of Uluru. And I really became acquainted with his thought and his work in a John Pilger documentary called Utopia that I saw, I guess, about in 2014. And I determined, I painted him this really nice rock that has the rainbow serpent and the Aboriginal flag, designed by Harold Thomas, who I actually know and who actually lives on the outskirts of Darwin here, who I have to catch up with this time. But this rock is the one I use as my Facebook profile. But he passed away before I could give it to him in person. But because of that, I was able to meet his widow, Barbara, give her one, make a duplicate for his granddaughter, Keisha, and left one just like it at his waterhole at Uluru. And this rock has led to many, many, many cool connections. And I'd really like to honor Auntie Dawn Blaisley, who I was able to catch up with in Tasmania, probably the top indigenous elder of Tasmania. And I was glad to be able to give her this really nice set of rocks. And I'm going to be trying to catch up with some indigenous women artists and spiritual leaders here in the top end, and hopefully over in Western Australia. And everything's just going. I've actually took 2 days, the past couple of days, I've done very little compared to my normal output. I sort of just rested and actually sat by the pool. Didn't go swimming in the pool because it's got too much chlorine, but just kind of sat around and checked some email. And I don't have all my art supplies and rocks and paintings with me, so I can't really work on that. But just kind of taking it easy and getting adjusted to the climate and just resting up, letting my body kind of like get used to the warmth. And I'm really trying to undergo some major healing, because the last couple of weeks in Tasmania I was pushing myself so hard that I kind of began to neglect my physical healing regime, my yoga every other day, and my qigong. I still do that every day. Didn't really do that much bicycling, and it was kind of cramped. My little room, which I really love, but it was kind of small. It was like being on a sailboat. I had to kind of twist and turn and lean over and line my feet up and move them around in order to navigate in the room. And when I was sitting, everything was kind of cramped and low, and my legs got a bit stiff, and they're still a bit stiff. And I went on about a 10K bike ride yesterday, and so I'm gradually getting back into limbering up and loosening up, and I'm going to try to really make a push to go to the next level with the neurological healing that mainstream medicine thinks can't happen. But I really want to get back to more than 100% instead of just the kind of the 98 or 95 where I am now. I'd really like to thank astronomer Fred Watson for taking the time to talk with me in honor of all the amazing cosmic stuff that's happening and continues to happen. And I really want to get back to focusing on the whole issue with Mars, how much in the limelight it is, and the whole thing of Duncan Steele wanting to infect Mars with genetically modified organisms. There's the Perseid meteor shower still happening now. We've got Venus in close conjunction with the moon in the morning sky. There was these little triad of little comets that came by the sun. We've still got Jupiter and Saturn more or less in opposition. But it's really funny, the whole thing with the coronavirus, you know, like what's happening in Victoria. It's just pure police state stuff. That's all it is. And it's just the excuse they're using. It's not an alien invasion. It's not Islamic terrorists. It's not climate change. It's this bogus kind of like a cootie bug they're calling COVID-19. I don't care who tells me what. I do not believe that it. I think there's a high probability that it does not even really exist in the way that we're being told. It's all about manipulate. It's all about appearances. This is, all of these things are part of the Zbigniew Brzezinskian paradigm of creating and maintaining persisting social crises whose solutions are the goal of the New World Order elite, who are unrestrained by traditional morals and ethics, to control America and the rest of the world and turn it into a much more highly controlled society, a scientific dictatorship, probably modeled after more sort of socialistic communist regimes like China. But so many people in New Zealand think that everything's fine, that the Ardern administration is just handling everything perfectly. Well, and of course they are, from the perspective of the United Nations and the International Banking Cartel. They're spot on. They're doing exactly what they've been scripted to do. But it was really funny this past week. I talked with my friends on Great Barrier Island, and just one of the last things John told me, he goes like, "Oh yeah, Jeff, now they're saying that they think that this latest cluster of coronavirus came from, people got it from fruit." Oh my God. And I just go like, how much more ludicrous can all this be? But I was reminded of the leader of, I believe it was the country Tanzania. And as far as I know, this was a for real video. I have no way of absolutely knowing, but supposedly the story was that they were suspicious of the whole thing. So they took swabs and took swabs of animals like goats and sheep and pigs, monkeys, donkeys. They took swabs of fruits and vegetables like pineapples and avocados and maybe citrus and things like that. And they double blind, they labeled it all. They put human names on there. They swabbed a pineapple and said, "This is Mary Jones," and they swabbed the avocado and said, "Like, this is Joe Blow." And so the testing lab thought it was from people. And so almost all of these, even from domestic animals and fruits and vegetables, came back as testing positive for coronavirus. So what does that tell you? It's just really, really interesting. And I have to share this. In the Adelaide airport, as I was about to leave and go get a taxi, there was a table set up, and it was four women sitting there shooting the shit, and it was labeled, I call it FIFO, but some people might pronounce it FIFO, F-I-F-O. It stands for fly in, fly out. It's people that, like mainly doctors and workers and stuff, who go to remote communities. They go for there for a couple of weeks and then come back. So they were doing coronavirus testing for the FIFO people. And they weren't busy, so I went up and I started just asking them if they minded if I just inquired about the specific type of test they were using. And they were glad to tell me, and I wish I'd written it down. The one they're using, it's a three-letter acronym starting with a C. CRS, or I can't remember exactly what it was, but I asked about the possibility of false positives, and of course the opposite of false negatives, blah, 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 blah. And of course they seemed totally convinced that it was all fair dinkum. But then after, when I saw they weren't busy and I thought about it, I went back and I said, like, "Hey, do you think I could get you guys to take a photo of me, like pretending like you're sticking a swab up my nose?" And they go like, oh, no, we're sorry, photos aren't allowed," and blah, blah, blah. And I go like, but how funny would that have been? But she said that they are collecting DNA. And I go, "Well, yeah, of course, that's in any time you have a substance from somebody that has DNA in it. If you're looking for that, it can be extracted and studied." So Anyway, I've got more questions about this whole scenario now than ever, but I just can't really keep paying much attention to it. I've had to pay attention. I covered it to the best of my ability, but not in recent months. But I've had to pay attention to not anything about the quote-unquote disease itself, but about the bureaucratic activities going on its behalf. And so that's what I was, before I made this trip, for weeks I've been talking with South Australia Police, Northern Territory Police, Flight Center, Jetstar, all the immigration, all the different sort of regulatory authorities and people with knowledge and stuff like that, and getting, asking the same question to many different people and making sure I got the same answer. And it did, it all lined up and I didn't have any problem at all. But the thing is, stuff like that can change. It can change relatively quickly. Like you'd think, if they're going to shut the border between a state or a country, that they'd give you like a few days of notice. But apparently, it can happen like in 24 hours. And so, if that's something that I'm dealing with now. I went ahead and shot on through in order to get up into the territory to make sure that I got here, where I'm planning to base myself for a while. But I didn't do any of the really essential and special visiting and travel I wanted to do in South Australia. So what I'm going to do is sometime in the next, probably less than a month, I'm going to go back down into South Australia and go visit Kangaroo Island. I'm going to go and visit Victor Harbour. I'm going to visit Second Valley. I'm going to visit Semaphore. I'm going to visit the Flinders Ranges and Wilpena Pound and Arkarula and the Gammon Ranges and maybe Lake Ackerman, which is a lake from a cometer asteroid impact, and then stop off in Alice Springs. By then I'll be back in the territory, and go to Uluru and hopefully do a new mural for the backpacker there, because I saw the manager and she was really excited to have me come and do more art. Right now it's the site of my largest mural ever in Australia, my version of the rainbow serpent and her sister. So anyway, I'm just relaxing and sitting here, and then I've got a little bit of sweat coming off my forehead. I'm sitting indoors with all the windows open underneath a ceiling fan that's going quite slow, and recording this show, getting ready to bicycle down to the ocean and have a swim a little earlier than yesterday, and gradually get back into the groove of my doing all my artwork and waiting for my boxes to arrive. And I've got to go and do some shopping, replace some gear. I'd also like to honor the most legendary electronics repair person I've ever known anywhere. His name's David Daly. We met in 2010 when Lisbeth and I were here, because my Macintosh had been destroyed, pretty much permanently damaged by this jerk in Alice Springs who pretended that he knew how to replace the DVD drive, but he didn't. He in taking my computer apart, he severed the ribbon cable, which was, to most people, that's an irreparable, it means you got to get a whole new computer. And there was no Macintosh dealer that would tackle that. And so David Daly is an electronics guy in Darwin, and he had never worked on a Macintosh, yet he took my computer and he said, "Jeff, leave it with me. I'll see what I can do." And he's just the coolest dude. And he's a brilliant. He loves challenges and can do. He could probably fix any. He could probably sew your hand back on, and it would work. But he went in and surgically soldered back all these tiny little nerve-sized wires that are the ribbon cable that connects the keyboard to the motherboard in my computer. And instead of charging me the about $800 that it normally would have been for how long it took, he only charged me a couple $100. And I've been eternally grateful. Anyway, I talked to him on the phone a couple of days ago, because now I've got a pair of really nice headphones that have a loose connection, and so he reckons he might be able to work a little magic on that and fix those too. Anyway, I've just got nothing but really, really good vibes of Darwin, powerful memories. This is where I had my greatest, most prolific support for my art and creativity here under the auspices of my friend Peter Chumley here in 2004. It's where I was Also, that time when my mom and dad got killed in a car wreck back in North Carolina when I was preparing to travel down through Western Australia. So that was very powerful. And then in June of 2007 here, I met Lisbeth Verstraeten, who became my partner that very night. And we just spent the next 5 years together having the most amazing journey and voyage. And so now I was back in Darwin for a few weeks, 3 years ago, staying with my really cool friends, Gregor and Aquaria, and their daughters, Ochre and Nimby. And that was really, really cool. So now I'm back again. And who knows what kind of really cool magical stuff is going to happen, but I just feel really supercharged up, and I'm setting up what could be my most optimum place to paint. Because in Tasmania, I got a lot done. Oh my God, I probably gave away, this is not an exaggeration to say that I gave away over $2,000 worth of art there, including the medicine wheel I made and sets of rocks and painted dolphins and little paintings and all different kind of stuff. I love Tasmania, but I love all of Australia. So now that I'm relocated up in the top end, and I'll be able to spread out a little bit more and kind of, not relax, but kind of space everything out a little bit, I'll be returning more to my emphasis on ecological and environmental issues, and especially the reason, the main emphasis of this trip to Australia from when I came back in March after the fires, which weren't that long ago. Oh my God, it seems like 2 years ago, but my healing journey around Australia in honor of all the beautiful life forms that have been so negatively impacted by the fires, like all the koalas and the lyrebirds and the forest owls and the wombats and the western ground parrots and the swift parrots and everybody that was already under attack and the glossy black cockatoos and everybody that was already in pain and suffering and being driven to the brink of extinction even before the fires and now just pushed over the edge. And that's why I really want to go to Kangaroo Island and over into Western Australia, and I really would like to visit some of the very sacred ancient Guion Bradshaw rock art there and the Wanjanas. And I really feel like I'm going to make it. Even though Western Australia is locked off right now, I feel like I'm going to make it. And I met a very interesting Aboriginal elder from Western Australia named Ian. He was a Greyhound bus driver. He knows Harold Thomas and a lot of people. And I told him, I said, like, Ian, I hope I get over there to see this rock art. He goes, like, Jeff, you will. He said that I would also make it to see Mount Augustus, which is a large monolith in remote, kind of in the Pilbara. It's four times bigger than Uluru. Even Ian said it's regarded as being the biggest rock in the world. So what better place for me to go? The rockest, to the biggest rock in the world. And I'm hoping to catch up with David Gulpaul, do another interview with Fred Watson and pick up on the Mars thing, and helping with the indigenous situation with elucidating the new dreaming and healing the wounds and mending the sacred hoop and being of service any way I can. And I'd really like to thank Mita Kaya Ilyasin and Jules Stanley ECYTV and everyone in Tasmania and everyone in New Zealand, Aotea, to Iki Maui, to Waipunamu, everyone in Hawaiki, Gondwana, Pangaea, Mother Earth, all the star nations. I guess that's all for now. This is Jeff Phillips Wevers and signing off for On the Brink Radio. Live simply so that others may simply live. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be happy. Good day.
Thank you. Oh,